Hello and welcome to episode 2 of the Albion Roar Down Under, sponsored by Pure Media. For those of you listening for the first time, this is a new podcast show for those Brighton and Hove Albion expats and local converts here in Australia and New Zealand. My name's Richard Parker, here in Auckland, New Zealand, and joining me every week is the founder of Seagulls Down Under fan club, Steve Longley. This week, Steve and myself will be reviewing last Sunday's game against Southampton. Was it a point well won or a disappointing stalemate? We'll also be giving you the lowdown from last Saturday's Seagulls Down Under Renfe game between the Brighton and Palace fans, which ended in a thrilling 3-3 draw. We'll hear from one of Albion's ex-players, Aussie Paul Reid, with his thoughts on the day, and Steve will be telling us the total so far raised and where the money will be going. Finally, our special guest this week is Richard Bayliss, executive producer and presenter at Optus Sports, and he's here to talk about their coverage of the Premier League. So, Steve, welcome. How's the sunburn?
I just got over it, actually. My head's peeling a bit.
Yeah. Why is it that every time you do the Renfe game, the sun is shining? And it's a good thing, but maybe not for football.
Well, I will tell you one thing. Anybody who wants to get married in Sydney, do it on the last Saturday in October, because it's always piping hot. Even though, you know, it rained the 2 days beforehand, out came the sun.
So plenty of sun cream and gazebos are in order. Okay, so let's kick off by talking about the Southampton game. And what was your opinion of the game, Steve? I think while I was watching it, and probably for the hours after, or maybe when I got up, because it was in the middle of the night, I was disappointed. But, you know, in reflection, it is a good point, and we can't really complain too much about a point at home. Every point is valuable.
Yeah, I mean, if you'd have taken a point before the start of the game, you would have taken a point at West Ham and maybe a win against Southampton, and we've done it in reverse. So 4 points from those two games I'd have been happy with, no matter which way around we got it.
I think it was because of the West Ham game and what a great win it was. But let's remember, West Ham were terrible. But we went into that Southampton game. They scored fairly early with a great free kick by Ward-Prowse, and obviously Stephen Davis heading into the empty goal. So, you know, already we're sort of under pressure. And for them to sort of fight back as they did, and in the second half get a goal from Glenn Murray, which was a pinpoint header. Do you think the goalie should have saved it?
I don't know if he actually meant to put it there, but that was one place where the keeper probably would have struggled to get to it.
I don't think a lot of people are giving credit to Glenn Murray about what a well-placed header it was, because it was right in the corner. I mean, you're talking about a goalkeeper who's 6'6", couldn't reach it, so it was the only place he was going to score. And what a great ball from Pascal Gross, and another assist. Yeah. And he's up there now with David Silva and Kevin De Bruyne, I think, with 5 assists for the season. Oh, no, they've got 6 and he's got 5, so he's just behind them.
We've seen what those two have been doing during the season.
Yeah, and they're playing for a team that are creating a lot of chances and scoring a lot of goals.
He may get very few chances to actually give the assists, but the assists that he is giving are certainly leading to goals.
Yeah, and there was a slight criticism about Albion recruitment process, especially towards the end of the transfer window, not getting a striker. But credit where credit's due at finding Pascal Gross. And what a bargain at $3 million.
Yeah, and apparently he was on the club's radar for a while. I mean, surprised that nobody else came in for him, to be honest.
Yeah, and let's hope nobody else comes in for him now. So going back to the Southampton game, I think the reason I was disappointed was I just thought that in the second half, especially, Southampton were possibly there for the taking. And if we wanted to, we could probably have gone after them a bit more and gone for the win. Now, I know, obviously, you leave yourself open if you do that, and there's a possibility of conceding. And I think probably after the West Ham game, that is what most disappointed me.
It sort of got to that point where, with 20 minutes to go, it looked like both teams were going to settle for the point. Yeah, it's one of those, you don't want to lose it, other take the point, go home with that, and go guns blazing and leave yourself open at the back. So, you know, it's a hard one to call. As a fan, you'd like to see them push on and get the extra goal and win the game. The reality of it is you're going to take the point and move on to the next one.
And the next one is Swansea away, and we'll talk more about that later in the show. So we move on to last Saturday's shenanigans down in Sydney, the Renfe fans match between Palace and the Albion. Just paint us a picture of how it was.
Oh, well, I mean, it was just an outstanding day, really. When you're organising these sort of things, you're always worried about numbers, and you're always pushing people to come along, and, you know, it becomes a bit sort of tiresome, keep banging on about it, but the end result obviously speaks for itself. You know, everybody enjoys the day. There's a few newcomers there. A lot of people that have been before, so know exactly what it's like. And of course, I couldn't do this all on my own. You know, people give me credit for this and credit for that, but it is a team effort. All I do is I get them there. Once I get them there, you have to do all them little jobs, you know, putting up the gazebo, getting the barbecue ready. And I just got to thank everybody involved who, in one way or another, you know, helped out. I can't name them all for fear of forgetting somebody. And then on top of that, we had the Optus cameras down there, which was pretty remarkable when you think that that is the equivalent of getting Sky Sports to the game.
Yeah, that must have added another dimension, and especially for the players, having a TV production company filming the game. I know they only used it for sort of a highlights package online, but still, it makes it a little bit special.
Well, it's quite remarkable about that highlights package, though. It just had 21,000 views.
Wow.
Which is just incredible, really.
How much did you end up raising in the end?
We raised $1,500.
And where will that money go?
So that money is going to go to the REMF. So that's where it goes first of all. Obviously, the REMF pass out the money to needy charities. And I got in contact with John Moriarty, who was the first Indigenous person to be selected to play for Australia, who runs John Moriarty Football, which is linked to the Nangalo Project, which is a project for Indigenous children from the age of 6 to 16, I think it is.
And John Moriarty was there on Saturday, and he spoke to Optus about his charity.
Yeah, the John Moriarty Football is, of course, a round ball game. And I come from a community called Borroloola in the Northern Territory. And Borroloola is a remote community on the Macarthur River. I was taken away when I was 4 years of age without my mum's knowledge, but set down and ended up being in Adelaide at a home there. And after a stint of a few years in Sydney, and the club there, Port Thistle, asked us to play, and they offered me a pair of boots, so I accepted, and because we were very poor in those days, we still are, I suppose, the Aboriginal people, but that gave me an introduction to the game, and it was fantastic. It just level of playing field in the community with us, for us, and with the game.
And how important is it to get Indigenous communities involved in football, given that AFL and NRL are so popular?
I think football, our game, is tailor-made for our Aboriginal people. They're very dexterous, quick moving on their feet, quick thinking, have a great vision, and also have a sense of space. And I think they're very well suited to the game. And you'll find that many of the top players, Aboriginal players in the leagues, AFL and rugby league, have played soccer in those early days, particularly the AFL. So soccer's given them a good start. But what we need to do, I think, is promote football from the grassroots level, like we're trying to do with the John Moriarty Football, to bring those kids through to a level where they can not only play for a good club in Australia, but also hopefully represent their country, and that's both boys and girls.
And is football growing in these communities?
Oh, look, yes, it is. Football is very strong in many communities, but it's the opportunities that come after those early training sessions. There's no step upwards for those kids to come through, and that's what we're trying to do, promote the kids. And it'd be good if the FFA and the state leagues embrace kids like the ones we're training, because there are many communities like ours that play football that would just grasp with both hands an opportunity to play like our kids and to develop themselves and the game for their communities and their families.
So, Steve, how did you find out about John Moriarty?
I found out because I spoke to Adam Peacock, who is the sports presenter with Foxtel. Yeah, and I said to him, do you know of any charities that we could donate the money to? Because we'd like to do something within Australia, obviously, being it's down under REMF game. He put me in touch with John. I went along and had a chat with him, and it just went from there, really.
Just going back to the game itself between the Brighton and Palace fans, I think some of the Palace fans were a bit upset that you can turn to a former professional to add to your team. And I'm talking about Paul Reid, because he scored again, didn't he?
He did. In fact, he scored two, even though I told him not to.
You actually told him not to score?
I said, whatever you do, don't go on and score a goal. And he did. So I should have taken him off for dissent.
Did he celebrate appropriately?
He did. He went over to the camera's badge. And
that is why he's an Albion legend.
And that's why everyone's there cheering and thinking, oh, great, this is great. And I'm standing there, did you really do that?
What a good sport. And he's been involved with the Renfrew game a few times now. How many times has he played?
He's played in every one.
Every one, so all five.
We had Lloyd Owusu, who played in two of them as well.
And you had the opportunity to speak to Paul Reid after the game, and this is what he said.
It's been a great day out. Everyone's enjoyed it. Fair result at the end of the day. What did you make of the day?
Yeah, I always enjoy the Renfrew game. You know, I always put it in the calendar when you tell me about it. I always actually know it's coming up towards the end of October, and you know, I really enjoy coming to this game. It's been the fifth game now, and I think we're still undefeated, which is nice. We've had three wins and two draws, and you know, thinking about the game today, we might have been a bit lucky at the start to not be behind, but you know, at the end of the day, a draw is nice for us. It'll definitely bring the Palace supporters back next year. If we keep winning, then I don't think they'll come back. You know, it always gets pretty competitive on the field, but we always have a bit of banter amongst each other. But you know, the main reason we're here is to raise money for the Renfrew charity. More than happy to be involved in this day. I'm glad you started it, Steve. You've grown the Seagulls Down Under fan base since you've been in Australia, and you know, it'll only continue. So all the Seagull supporters really appreciate what you've done. And you know, we do understand it takes a lot to organise a day like this, and you know, a job well done. But yeah, next year we're going to win it, okay? We can't let the Palace supporters get a result against us.
I have to say that when Paul Reid played for us, he was one of my favourite players. I thought he was a little bit underrated at the Albion. And he's played in actually some big games, or some games that we remember. And one of them obviously being the away game at Palace where McShane scored with that header.
Yeah, that was we did discuss that game being quite relevant as we were playing Palace.
And we've got that interview, but I'm going to save it for the show in a couple of weeks when we do play Crystal Palace. And he also played in the 2004 playoff final when we beat Bristol City at Cardiff.
Yeah, he did, yeah. Unfortunately, he was injured for his last season at the Albion. Had a knee injury, and he left along with Guy Butters and Kerry Mayo at the same time.
So what's it like playing the Palace fans? Is it all good banter in the end?
Oh yeah, there's quite a bit of banter goes on, but you know, it would have been quite easy to go there and take the mickey out what's happened to them, but you know, it could quite easily have been us. So I did say to the guys beforehand, let's just, you know, be gentlemen about it. I don't mind banter. Banter's good, and there's plenty of that going on the side, I assure you. The other thing is, I've got to thank the Palace guys, because, you know, without them, there wouldn't be a Renfrew game. It's as simple as that. You know, and they turn up, they give a good account of themselves, you know. They sort of have a go about us playing Paul Reid, but, you know, I think they quite like to play against him, to be honest.
Yeah, exactly.
I think there was a few choice tackles going in there to see if they could knock him off the ball.
And you all have a beer afterwards?
Oh yeah, sausages, raffle, chin wag, home we go.
Okay, it's time to introduce our special guest this week. This is Rich Bayliss. He's an executive producer and presenter at Optus Sports. Welcome, Rich. How's it going?
Thank you, guys. Very good. How are you guys doing?
Yep, we're good. Right, I've been told to ask you by Steve what team you support.
Well, Steve has the inside word, and I think he's ready with giving me a bit of crap about it as well. So I support Leeds. Big, dirty Leeds fan, yeah.
Okay, I was expecting something else, but that's still pretty bad. Okay, so why Leeds?
I guess it was, you know, when I grew up you know, in Australia about 20 years ago now, and I was a young fella, and I guess, you know, Australian players were always at Leeds pretty much from the late 90s, from Harry Kewell through to 2010 when Paddy Cisnorbo was there. But I think even beyond just the Australian element, I just really like watching them. You know, they had a good young team in the Premier League, and that was it. And a lot of people in Australia have given up on them because it's been a long old slog outside of the Premier League. But I've stayed tough, even though it's been pretty difficult a lot of the time, especially when you guys played us twice last year, and you thoroughly outclassed us as well. It sort of it wasn't nice.
Well, to be fair, we outclassed quite a lot of teams last season, so
that's true. That's true. It was one of the more, I guess, in terms of the season where you guys went up, yourselves and Newcastle, you know, Huddersfield fell away obviously towards the back end, but it was one of the more lopsided championship seasons, and you thoroughly deserved getting up to the top flight.
And what was quite amusing, towards the end of the season, we even outclassed ourselves and blew the championship title. So there you go.
Yeah, and I think if it was anyone except Newcastle, you'd say, you know, that's okay, because the aim is to finish top two, but you don't want Newcastle finishing first, ever, do you?
And they didn't deserve it either.
No.
So actually, interestingly enough, you still supported Leeds last season when you had Chris Wood, even though he's a Kiwi.
Yeah.
Was that painful?
Yeah, less said about... it was a little bit. For anyone that's seen Chris Wood play in person, online, on TV, whatever it is, or seen the Jimmy Bullard clip with Chris Wood, it's very hard to explain why he scores so many goals. But if he's in your team, he's the sort of player you want. But now he's moved off to that small club, Burnley, I think it is. Yeah, I think we forget about him.
Yeah, it's funny you should say that. I watched the All Whites game in their World Cup qualifier against the Solomon Islands. They're the team that you used to play about 5 years ago before you decided that you wanted to go and play real football. And he scored...
Well, winning 32-0 was fun.
Yeah,
it was
good. So he actually scored a couple of goals, and it, they were good goals, to be fair, but then you look at the opposition and you go, well, you know. But no, I mean, let's be fair to Chris Wood. He scored a lot of goals in the championship, and he's now doing it for Burnley. So, but
And it's remarkable how important those strikers are too. You don't see them often enough these days. You see them a lot in the championship, just the old fashioned number nines who, you know, it's not overly convincing, but they know how to strike in the 6-yard box, and you've got a guy at the moment in Murray that's having a similar effect as well, and you can't underestimate the power of those guys.
Yeah, but 23 goals last season, and he was injured at the beginning of this season, so he's, you know, 3 goals in 2 games. I think he's just a very clinical finisher. He is an old-fashioned number nine, like you say, but there's still a need for that kind of player in this game, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think the danger potentially for Brighton at the moment is the fact that obviously Gross has come in and he's providing assists and creating more chances than most players in the Premier League, it has to be said. But, you know, Murray, I think I read the other day, 5 of his last 10 goals have come off his head as well. So I just hope that, you know, you guys have got the adaptability when things don't go as well, and guys like Gross and Solly March aren't creating as much from out wide. But I happened to be at the Amex the other week, and I have to say, my first time there, I was very impressed. It wasn't the best game ever. It was the one all against Everton, but I really enjoyed the atmosphere and being there for the first time and just seeing how a club of Brighton size and having the story it's had over the last decade sort of has embraced Premiership football. I hope it continues for quite a while.
Were you surprised with when Knockhart scored? The emotion, the explosion of the crowd when we scored. I mean, I've been reading a lot of people saying that the atmosphere has been so amazing when Brighton score. And we piled the pressure on Everton in the second half and finally got that goal. Were you surprised by the atmosphere there?
I'm not sure I was totally surprised, because you could feel it coming in the game. I think there was a 15-20 minute period where Brighton, it seemed like it was a matter of time. And the crowd were just so into it anyway. And it was almost a release in emotion and pressure and a relief from the crowd. It was devastating when they conceded at the end. I mean, I'm not too sure what your captain was doing, giving away a penalty there. But, you know, it was... interestingly, the day before, I'd been at Liverpool, Manchester United at Anfield, which, you know, for all the hundreds of millions of people that you're told are watching that game, I think 900 million is the figure that it's probably made up. But, you know, you look at how big that game is, and obviously when it starts, Anfield's a fantastic place to be, the noise and the expectation. But if the game doesn't go to plan, it quite quickly falls away. And the second half lost all sort of momentum, and Mark Schwarzer was sitting next to me, and he just said, "This is flat." And that was at, you know, 50 minutes in, whereas, you know, at Brighton the following day, it wasn't the best 90 minutes of football, has to be said, but I think the crowd made it 90 minutes of exciting kind of atmosphere, and the air was fantastic. So, as I said, I hope it goes on throughout the season. I'm sure it will, given it's a new journey for most of you guys. But, yeah, I have to say it's one of the better venues I've been to recently.
And we also have to talk to you about Matty Ryan, our Australian goalkeeper. What do you make of his start to the season?
Well, I think his actual start was a little bit questionable. We caught up with Matty a couple of weeks ago, and he was saying that he felt he was a little bit unlucky in a couple of instances. You know, he knows he could have done better. The opening goal at Leicester, for example, like he wouldn't dare sort of stick up for that one. But I think it was okay. And sort of speaking to a lot of the fans there, they'd sort of started to warm to him. This was about 2 weeks ago, and I think his performance that day was really good.
Oh,
that
it was brilliant. The double save at the end was incredible.
Big time. Well, what are you guys thinking? Are you sort of have you had your opinion changed at all, or have you are you completely settled in the fact that he's your true number one ahead of Tim Krul?
I tell you what, any goalkeeper who runs the length of the pitch to celebrate when we've just scored is all right in my books. And he seems to do that every time we score. I think against West Ham when Izquierdo scored, and there was a big bundle of players, and you just saw the keeper's glove of Matt Ryan sort of get involved as well. Now, that's all right with me. but to be fair, I think he's, like you say, his start was a little bit nervous perhaps, but he's certainly grown into the role. And I think he'll only get better. You know, I think he's done a good job for us so far. And like I just said, his enthusiasm and, you know, the way he gets involved with the crowd, especially after the games, he's good for hanging around and signing autographs, and that will only endear himself with the Albion crowd more.
Yeah, I think to be fair, all the new signings struggled a bit at first. You know, it's a whole different ball game coming from where they were playing before to going to the Premier League. I mean, the expectation, the weight on their shoulders, and everything else. You know, you can't help but walk out there first game of the season feeling a bit nervous about it. You know, unless you've played in the Premier League before, you just don't know what to expect. And these are guys that have seen the Premier League on TV, and all of a sudden they're thrust into it. And it takes a while to sort of settle down and, you know, become accustomed to it being an every week occurrence, you know. So the first two or three games, you've got to expect, you know, they're not going to be up and firing. And I think now they've sort of grown into that role and they're doing really well.
Yeah, and I think it was interesting as well hearing, I'm not sure if you guys saw it, but we put together a feature with Matty, Mark Schwarzer and Matty Ryan a couple of weeks ago. And I think the turning point for Matt was when the Albion went to the Emirates. Because Matt, as you mentioned, Steve, these guys have seen the Premier League. But once you're in it, you don't know what it's like until you're in it. And Matty was an Arsenal fan growing up. And he actually said to us that he went there with an air of expectation. But all of a sudden in the Emirates, the atmosphere wasn't imposing at all. He thought maybe there's a lot of international visitors, or he couldn't quite put his finger on what it is. And we all know that the Emirates is not atmosphere-wise great at the moment. But it was kind of interesting from him. He was just saying, like, that just settled me down. And he had a pretty good game despite the 2-0 defeat. And I think that was, in a way, a bit of a turning point.
Yeah, I think with a lot of those grounds that, I mean, look at West Ham. It's the atmosphere there is pretty lifeless. The Emirates is pretty lifeless, and there's a few new stadiums that are the same. Fortunately for us, ours isn't. You know, we've got a good bunch of supporters there. They've been through the mill over the last 20 years. So we're just glad to be there. But we're not there to make up the numbers. We're there to, you know, finish 17th at the least, and build a platform for next year. But I think a lot of the bigger sides, maybe not so much with the West Hams, but the Arsenals, who are a big side that have struggled over the years, and even to that extent, sort of Spurs, and you even get it at Chelsea, where they feel they've got the God-given right to be there, and they probably have, but the support's not so vocal.
Okay, so Rich, just going back to the Everton game, and from the point of view of someone who works for Optus, what was your take on the Premier League's fan zone in India?
Yeah, it was interesting. I, given that match wasn't on live anywhere in the UK, it sort of, and the kickoff time was moved. It was a really, really weird feeling I found being there and knowing the inner workings of the broadcast and how that works, because, you know, that territory, obviously India is so far away, and to have something localised in a smaller sort of venue like Brighton, basically being tailored for something so far away, it's quite surreal, I find. I mean, I think I didn't see too much of it, given the fact I was in the UK, but I think that's the way the Premier League thinks at the moment. They've got these massive markets that they know are an absolute goldmine in terms of, you know, India, Asia, specifically China, these big territories. And I think you'll see more of that, actually. I think you'll see kickoff times moved. The day before, you've got Liverpool, Manchester United at 12:30 local kickoff. Not ideal for local fans, but it's almost irrelevant. I mean,
yeah,
45,000 people in a stadium. What is that compared to tens of millions, if not a couple of hundred million people in the Far East? So it's a funny one, isn't it? And it also proves, you know, if Brighton were to stay in the Premier League for a long period, or, you know, certainly more than a season, you know, get a foothold there, you know, if you consider how many more eyeballs every year watch the Premier League and how globally massive it is and getting bigger, Brighton, as a result, can quickly kind of build itself into a strong club financially, much stronger than they are, just based on a couple of years of being in that competition. We know the gap between the Premier League and the Championship financially is already quite big. And the longer you're out of the Premier League, the more out of touch you are with the global nature of the Premier League. The example being, you know, the fact that so many Leeds fans that were Leeds fans in Australia 20 years ago no longer go for them because they see Chelsea and Man City and, you know, whatever. I mean, that's just a reality of the fact that the Premier League has that much pull around the world, and the gap between first and second tier is massive. So I think for a club like Brighton to latch onto it, it's an interesting experiment, and I hope you get the chance to see how it evolves over the next couple of years.
Yep, definitely. So Steve's got some questions about Optus's Premier League coverage.
Yeah, Richard, a couple of things we'd just like to clear up, because we had a lot of people, obviously, on our Facebook page moaning about the on-demand service at the West Ham game, waking up in the morning to watch it on demand. It obviously wasn't there. Obviously, a lot of people were criticising Optus, but I just want you to clarify, if you will, the on-demand service. And I know that this is not an Optus problem, and I have explained this to people. It's a Premier League directive, is that correct?
Yeah, so it all comes down to the contract that's signed between Premier League and the broadcasters. So contractually, we're only able to show 29 out of 38 matches for each club on demand. So 290 games over the season out of the 380, which is as good as it gets worldwide. And the Premier League have, for whatever reason, that's just what they're offering in terms of the contract. What Optus are allowed to show on demand is a significant step up from what the last broadcaster was able to show on demand on their website. So, yeah, it is a frustrating one. I understand that, because I think a lot of people don't go looking for the information before the weekend, if that makes sense. I think people just assume that, oh, I'll wake up and watch it, whereas, you know, maybe you don't go looking for it beforehand. There are ways to still watch it. I mean, there are replay times across Optus Sport 1 throughout the next day, and having worked closely with the scheduling people in there, the games that aren't on demand will always be scheduled to be replayed at good times, as in, you know, early-ish that next morning, or, you know, late afternoon, early evening when people are at home. There are things that are considered, but unfortunately, whatever the contract says, that's the way it is. And the other thing is that every club has the exact same number of games on demand. So whether it's Liverpool or Huddersfield or Brighton, whoever it is, then, you know, they get 29 games. So, yeah, it's a shame that people find themselves in that situation. The other option they've got, of course, is to record the games through the Fetch Box that's offered as a partnership with Optus. And, you know, I think hopefully over time that people will sort of, you know, get more used to what is a very new system. But also, we'd just love to have every game on demand. So we hope that's an option next time we're speaking to the Premier League.
Who decides which games go on demand?
So that's decided sort of in the editorial group in there. It's kind of a jigsaw puzzle. I've seen the way the guys work it out, because, you know, you sort of have to try to work out which clubs will be in the title fight and the relegation fight towards the end of the season, because obviously you want those key matches on demand. So you don't want to You know, you don't want to have too many Manchester United, Chelsea, Man City games at the moment on demand, because if they have none left at the end of the season and they're fighting for the title, it doesn't make sense. So there's a bit of jigsaw puzzle work happening there, but by and large, it's just a group of football fans in there that try as best they can to look after everyone in a fair manner. And you know, I think while ever we can't give all 38 games on demand, there'll always be someone annoyed. So, that's why we try to give the information, but it's hard.
That decision is made by Optus, basically, to decide which games go on demand. Obviously, it's a different broadcaster here in New Zealand, and I guess it's with that broadcaster, they decide which games go on demand as well.
You know, what I'd say about the Premier League is that they know what they're doing in terms of looking after their rights. And you know, you've got so many things these days as well in regards to piracy and people like illegal streaming and everything like that, that most of these things are fairly well restricted. But we've tried a few times to push the envelope where we can in terms of getting more games on demand, and hopefully that'll be a good sort of point of negotiation in the next rights deal.
And where would fans find the information about which games you're showing on demand for that weekend?
So we put the information out over Twitter and Facebook every week. It's all available in a lot of our comms that go out to subscribers over email. It's on the website as well, on sport.optus.com.au, which is another portal where you can actually watch the games. All the fixture listing have on demand next to it, or not on demand, as it were. So the information's it's out there, but I would probably agree that we need to get a bit better at doing that and sort of preempting. It might be a sort of way where, you know, maybe we get in touch with you, Steve, every week where a game's not on demand and say, hey, the game's not on demand this weekend, but here's the replay times, here's where you can watch it otherwise. That might be a good way forward.
Yeah. Well, I just, as I've said to everybody, the best thing to do is just set it to record all the Brighton games, and that's job done. But the only problem is, obviously, there's those people that have only got the smaller package. They haven't got a fetch drop box. And then, obviously, it becomes a bit of a problem. They can't get demand. So
I think with Optus, I think, it's such a different way of watching football or sport here. I think, like, in the UK and other places, the US, the kind of digital streaming service is a bit more embedded, whereas it is new, and I think as people come on board with it, and it will take a little bit of time. And from our end as well, we haven't done everything perfectly, but we're trying pretty much every week to improve things, and we'd hope that soon enough, you know, everyone will just be used to it and happy with what they're watching.
Now, one other question: who looks after your social media? Is that done in from this country?
It is, actually. Yeah, it's done. It's done from Australia. Like
that. I was a little disappointed, actually, after the West Ham game, when I saw all the games that had been played. I saw, you know, there was clips. I think it was clips of goals or something, and there was various things said. But we played West Ham, and there was nothing. There was nothing on social media from Optus. All I saw was a retweet of the club's post, and also leading up to that game as well. I didn't see anything. There was nothing to say, oh, you know, kickoff's at 6:45 in the morning. Whereas over the weekend, we've got all the tweets for all the clubs, you know, this game's live at this time, this is at this time. But nothing about the Albion game. It's West Ham.
Yeah, that is a bit strange, actually. I can't really defend that one. I'm not sure what happened there, because as you mentioned, all the other games would have been mentioned. So I'll pass the feedback on to the social media department, that's for sure, Steve. I'll make sure that doesn't happen again.
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much for everything that you did on Saturday, you know, production team and highlighting the game. And remarkably, that's had 21,000 views, that clip.
You know, you're supporting two charities. You've obviously got a great group of people there, and you've got a big supporter base already out here. And I think one of the reasons why that clip went really well online, and I've seen some of the analytics behind it as well. So 21,000 views, but the reach is so much wider. The reach is around 100,000 because, you know, you're having, you know, the Brighton Hove Albion Football Club, and you've got, obviously, Crystal Palace, the clubs have both put it on their websites and got in touch with us and retweeted it and all that kind of thing. And I don't think they would do that if they weren't proud of what you guys are doing here with the supporter clubs. They obviously are, like, overwhelmed with the fact that you guys go to that effort to support them so far away. And that was, I think, that came through in the piece that the guys put together, that, you know, every club, all 20 clubs in the Premier League have these supporter bases in Australia. And it's good to sort of connect with you guys because you're just like us. We love the sport as well. We love football. So it's good to sort of get that connection in Australia because, as we all know, we're sitting up late at night watching something so far away. But, you know, the good thing is when you meet like-minded people having a kick around.
It's also good. It's good for us because, obviously, people like Man United, Liverpool and the like always get, you know, good raps for their supporters' clubs, and their supporters' clubs out here are huge. I know Tottenham, they won, they do a hell of a lot. And for two smaller supporters' clubs, if you like, to, you know, get centre stage for, you know, a day, it's just amazing, really, because I was just blown away by it all, to be honest.
Okay, Richard, before you go, we need to talk about Fansistry. Can you explain to us what Fansistry is?
Yeah, so Optus started a bit of an initiative called Fansistry. It's the most simple thing you could ever find. It's on the Optus Sport website, or fansistry.optus.com.au for the plug. Basically what it is, it gives non-Premier League followers or casual Premier League followers, casual sporting fans, a link to a Premier League club. If you don't have a club, it's a way of basically you just put your last name in, and it tells you where your ancestry comes from. Or if you're not from English or European ancestry, it traces where your family may have travelled to. Or, you know, if you're from Asia and you have a certain part of your family that lives near Birmingham, say, it might say who you go for or who you should select in the Premier League. I'm not necessarily thrilled with the answer I got, but
which
any
was?
Answer actually I got. It was West Brom, of all people.
Hmm.
West Brom.
Yeah.
I mean, even people from West Brom aren't thrilled with that answer. But the thing I like about it is that, it, apart from the fact that it kind of... A lot of my friends, actually, who love all sport, love the Premier League, but have got so far into it that they don't have a team, which blows me away. And I think it's interesting for that, you know, people, whether you want to take it seriously and take on a club and say, okay, well, I'll keep an eye on them. But I think it's also interesting, and I was talking to Steve about this the other day, that if you could almost find out who the real Albion fans are, who the real Brighton fans are. It's like a test. When you get the 500 together watching a game, it's almost like, all right, let's prove who the real Albion fans are here. So I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether you could read too much into it, but it's a bit of fun.
It's a bit of fun, yeah. I had a bit of a play with it the other day, and I put Steve's name in. And Steve turned out that he should be supporting Chelsea.
Oh.
And do you know what the funny thing... I'll tell you what, Steve. The funny thing is, it was... So what it does is it breaks down a percentage of where the Longleys are in England. And it breaks down as 7% in Sussex, 28% in Kent, and 64% in Surrey.
Wow.
And you got Chelsea. I'll say no more.
Sorry, Steve. What about you, Richard? Where were you?
Bizarrely enough, I got Huddersfield. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Because apparently all the Parkers came from Yorkshire, so it was obviously Huddersfield. Nah. Yeah, it's a bit of fun. Obviously, if you want to go on there, it's fansistry.com.au and see what team you should be supporting.
Yeah, it's interesting. The other good thing about it is that it's linked with a 2-week free trial, basically. If you don't have Optus and you want to see what it's about, then doesn't matter who you're with, you can go on there, and once you fill in the Fansistry, find out you should be going for Watford, you can then decide whether you actually want to watch Watford, which at the moment is probably not the worst team to be watching. They're going all right, but you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, you are listening to the Albion Roar Down Under podcast, sponsored by Pure Media, the full-service video production company based here in Auckland. Visit www.pureproductions.co.nz for more information on how Pure can create a fully customised, crafted video for your business. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our email is albionroardownunder@gmail.com. Get in touch if you'd like to be part of the show, or if you have any views or issues Albion-related you'd like us to discuss. Okay, let's move on to the weekend's game against Swansea. So it's an away game at Swansea on Saturday, and everybody's favourite Premier League referee, will be officiating at the game, Mike Dean. Thoughts?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's not my favourite referee. Yeah, well, obviously, we've got history with him after the Middlesbrough game. And he's got a bit of history himself, so let's just forget about him and just get on with the game and go out there and give a good account of ourselves and not worry about him.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of the Albion fans will be giving him a lot of stick. Do you think Dale Stevens will go into the game, you know, knowing that obviously Mike Dean is the referee? Do you think it will change his game in any way?
No, not at all. You don't do that. Any professional won't change their game just because of the referee. That just won't happen.
So Swansea are fourth from bottom. It's an away game where now, after the win against West Ham, we might fancy our chances in this one.
Yeah, but, you know, no game's a certainty, is it? That's the Premier League. I mean, you could play the bottom team, we could play Palace, we could lose. It's just as it is, you know, we could go and snack points at one of the top six teams. You just never know. It's whoever wants it on the day. And Swansea have struggled, but you've got to think they've not got a bad side, you know. You've got to think at some point, the same with a few other teams that are struggling down there, at some point they've got to click. And we just hope it's not against us. And we said the same about West Ham. At some point West Ham have got to click, and we hope it's not against us, and it wasn't. There's a few other teams that, you know, I mean, Southampton, I think Southampton, to be honest, are in a false position. And there's maybe the same with Swansea. You know, they should probably be up a bit further. And listening the other day about Tommy Abrahams, you know, I mean, he is a handful. We were after him at one point. He decided to go to Swansea, obviously with a Paul Clement connection. And I think you give him the service, he's going to score goals. Just that he's not getting the service. He still scored 5 goals this season, but I think you give him the correct service, he could score a hatful of goals, to be honest. I mean, Chelsea obviously think highly of him, because before we went out on loan, they gave him a 5-year deal. So, you know, he's a good player. We know. We watched him last season at Bristol. You know, he was in the poor side and scored 27 goals.
Yeah, I think Swansea, like you say, they're probably in a little bit of a false position like others. But the Premier League is pretty bunched up from fourth from bottom upwards through to the European places. There's only about 5 or 6 points. So it's pretty close. And you can go on a run of 2 to 3 games without a win, and all of a sudden you're down there and you're in trouble. And the same is for a team who put a couple of wins together, and then they're going to be up top half of the table. So it's all pretty tight.
Yeah, I think it makes it even more important for you guys at the moment. If you look at the fixturing, obviously you've got 4 points from the last couple, and add the point against Everton too. You haven't been beaten by anyone convincingly, really, I would say, since City. I mean, otherwise, you've really got to take advantage of this fixture list at the moment, given that United, Liverpool and Chelsea all come up before the end of the year. And the turn of the year is always the key indicator for clubs that have come up. You've made a good start, but I would think that, you know, you'd be looking at Swansea and then Stoke, and I don't know, would you guys be happy with 3 points, be happy from that, or you expect more? What are you thinking?
I think it would be nice to carry on the unbeaten run. I mean, in an ideal world, 4 points from those 2 games would be brilliant. Win your home game, draw away from home, that would be the ideal scenario. But I guess if we could, 3 points. So as long as we win our home games, that's kind of what we aim for at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, I mean, even if we don't win our home games, as you know, a draw minimum, especially against the teams that are going to be around and about us, we don't worry about what's going on at the top end of the table. We know, you know, there might be the odd occasion where we, you know, get a 0-0 against one of the top teams at home. But what's going on around us is they're the teams we've got to pick up points against. And it doesn't matter even if it's only a draw. You know, this is what I was saying the other day. You know, if we win, great. But if we draw at home, it's not the end of the world, you know. And as I said earlier, you know, we got those 2 results the wrong way round. You know, we thought we'd go to West Ham, get a draw, be good, and win at home to Southampton, but we did it the other way round. So as long as you're picking up points, you know, even if we went through the next 3 or 4 games and we only picked up a point a game, as long as we're not losing, that's fine. And, you know, we've set it out that, that's the point ratio we need to be heading for at the end of the season, that we've picked up a point a game. We're not going to pick up a point every game.
So I think we'll just round this off with some predictions. So, Rich, as a neutral, what's your prediction?
Well, I'm not convinced by Swansea. I know Abraham's been dangerous. I'm not in any way convinced by Sanchez. I think 1-1 is probably a fair one. I mean, it would not surprise me if you guys won 2-0. Again, another good win on the road. I can't see you guys sort of losing by a couple. I think you've been solid enough, shown enough to suggest to me that I think it'll be tight. I'm going to say 1-1.
Cool. And Steve?
Well, I'd take 1-1, but I'd also take 1-0.
Yeah, yeah.
A scrappy 1-0, 89th minute winner.
Yeah, I think it'll be a draw. Maybe 0-0, I'm going to go for. Which is not great viewing when you have to get up at 4 in the morning to watch it. But,
yeah. No, it's worse for you, Rich, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. At 4 o'clock actually is all right, because I probably won't go back to sleep afterwards. It's when you sort of have to get up at 2:30, and then, you know, 2 hours, and then 4:30, you think, well, I've got to sleep, and then I've got to get up in an hour and a half later. But one thing I would say, when we're talking about the coverage of the Premier League, and I'll just finish with this, is that we don't realise how good we've got it, because we can watch every single game, and which is more than fans in the UK can do. Obviously, they can go to the games, which we can't, but we do have the privilege of watching every single game, however we decide to watch it, whether it be on demand, whether it be live, recorded. So having that option, you know, definitely makes supporting the club a lot easier than it was in the past, which is great. Okay, so Rich, many thanks for joining us. It's been great having you on the show, and perhaps we can get you back on when Brighton draw Leeds in the FA Cup.
Let's hope so, when we're both in the Premier League next season.
I could have said that, but probably the FA Cup's more likely.
the FA Cup in a few years' time. Yeah, let's see how we go. But no, it's a pleasure chatting with you guys, and as I said, hope Brighton have a good season. I have a feeling they'll do well.
Awesome. All right, Steve, thanks again, and thanks everyone for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now.